Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Tuesday, the 8th of December. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up at the Climate Summit in Paris, this official from NEPAD, the African Union Economic Development Programme, tells us how climate change is contributing to migration.
You cannot refuse the fact that lack of job opportunities, you know, for youth in rural areas, because they don't see how they can engage productively in the use of the land because it's degraded, is also a contribution to the migration challenge.
And Rwandan President Paul Kagame has yet to announce whether or not he will run for a third term. This analyst tells us what could be shaping his decision.
He recently said that the more people tell me not to do it, the more likely I am to do it. And I think, of course, President Kagame himself doesn't want to be seen to be bowing down to pressure.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Organisers of global climate talks in Paris are sounding hopeful that they could reach a deal by the end of the week, even though there was little indication of how differences over funding could be resolved. It's already certain that the national emissions pledges made ahead of Paris will not be enough to prevent global temperatures rising past a dangerous threshold of 2 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial times. But there is at least a growing sense that there will be more money for the developing countries least able to give up fossil fuels or most vulnerable to the increased floods, droughts, storms and rising sea levels that climate change will bring. Estreen Fotobong is the Director of Programmes at NEPAD, which is an African Union economic development programme. She's in Paris, and Jane Ayeko asked her what African participants at the conference have been saying.
Questions like financing, for instance, has been coming up a lot. Questions on how to the kind of technologies that will be needed to help Africans to transition, you know, to a low-carbon economy have been coming up a lot. Questions of, you know, the types of partnerships to build at different levels, whether communities, national, regional and global, to address a problem that is a common challenge, even though, you know, African countries are the ones that are greatly impacted on the ground by this phenomenon. So I think, in terms of the participation, the presence of the continent is felt through the head of state and through the African pavilion that has been so busy since the 30th. We've had, from NEPAD, for instance, we have organized 4 or 5 side events.
No, but just before you go to NEPAD, we'll come back to that one at a little stage. You've just talked about African states asking for more money to combat climate change, to, you know, to enhance their participation in the whole global fight on climate change. Now, is it just a question of more money, or is there anything concrete? What is the point of focus that African states are saying, this is our starting point, this is what we are going to be looking at?
Well, of course, it's not just a question of money. The main question for the continent is the impact that climate change have on its economy. So the question of adaptation is critical for the continent, because from all the reports and statistics available, it's already shown that climate change is impacting on agriculture, on the forest cover, on coastal cities through coastal erosion. So there's real economic impact and consequences of the impact of climate change and climate variability for the continent. Again, as a result of the impact of more severe drought leading to land degradation and reduction in agricultural productivity, we are seeing this migration issue that we are noticing right now. It's not only about climate change costs, but you cannot refuse the fact that lack of job opportunities, you know, for youth in rural areas because they don't see how they can engage productively in the use of the land because it's degraded, is also a contribution to the migration challenge.
Estherine Fotabong in Paris. Climate change in Africa is normally associated with drought, famine, flooding and loss of animals. However, some observers are also detecting a link between climate change and the spread of terrorism. Lake Chad has been severely battered by climate change. Water levels have fallen dramatically and it is no longer able to sustain the local economy as in times gone by. And when prospects are bleak, some young people become vulnerable to terrorist ideology. This report by Teresa Krinninger has been adapted for Africa Link by Loveday Wright.
Lake Chad is dying. That's what Niger's President Mahamadou Issoufou told delegates at the Paris Climate Conference last week. Once the lake measured nearly 10,000 square miles. But after droughts in the 1970s and 80s, Lake Chad shrank to less than 600 square miles across. Reservoirs filled by the lake almost dried up, putting millions of livelihoods at risk. Even now, water levels are still affected by the drought, says Sara Vassolo from the German Federal Institute for Geosciences and Natural Resources.
Since around the year 2000, the rainfall has gradually started to increase. But the water runoff from the lake is staying the same. It's not increasing.
The population in the region has almost tripled since the 1980s. More than 30 million people live in the area, mainly farmers and fishermen. They're struggling to make ends meet. And the difficult conditions caused by climate change makes them an easy target for extremist groups looking to recruit members and control land. That's according to Norbert Seifer, a researcher on the region.
I can imagine that these people who have no prospects are promised a better future by extremist groups.
The region is chronically unstable, suffering from repeated attacks by Islamist terrorist group Boko Haram. In the past 10 years, the group has gained in strength. And with the population growing and resources becoming scarcer, conflicts over pasture land are also increasing. Every year, hundreds of people die in confrontations between local farmers and herdsmen from the north. Philip Jagpour from the NGO Friends of the Earth Nigeria believes that his government is not doing enough to solve conflicts caused by climate change.
As we stand, the Nigerian government doesn't have any position. There is no particular ministry of government that is tasked with coordinating all activities at either mitigation of the impact of climate change or coordinating other actions.
And Jagpour is not optimistic that the ongoing talks at the Paris Climate Conference will change things.
All they're interested in is go there, walk around, sit in the meetings and then come back home and do nothing.
It's a vicious cycle. Climate change aggravates conflicts over land and resources. And in the worst case, it can foster the rise of terrorist groups.
Loveday Wright with a report by Teresa Krinninger.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
The debate over how many terms a president may serve has flared across Africa. In Burundi, President Pierre Nkurunziza's insistence on a controversial third term has plunged the country into chaos. In neighbouring Rwanda, President Paul Kagame, in power for more than 20 years, has drawn foreign criticism over a planned constitutional amendment which would allow him to remain in office after 2017. Kagame's hold on power would appear secure. Both houses of parliament are dominated by the ruling Rwandan Patriotic Front, the RPF, Kagame's party. As Pritish Bahuria, a researcher at the London School of Economics, told Jane Ayeko, it's almost a foregone conclusion that Kagame will run for another term.
Well, of course, President Kagame has not committed to the fact that he will run again, although it is quite likely. He hasn't actually come out and said it yet. But, of course, if he does take the step, I think it will have huge implications in terms of Kagame and the RPF's legitimacy abroad, number one. Will the U.S. and other donors continue to support him in the same way? Will he have the same kind of agency to run the country and push economic development and get away with some of the violations that many critics say that he has committed? at the same time, pushing, running again and extending his term does give some space to some of his critics within the RPF and also abroad, who have always claimed that Rwanda is not a legitimate democracy, etc. At the same time, I think in defense, in a way, of President Kagame, he has pushed through a great deal of economic development. And the question perhaps may not be whether democracy or should be pushed, but rather it should be taking into account the more political considerations at the time. I think the biggest failing at the moment for the Rwandan government and the RPF in particular is that the party doesn't seem like a lived organization. And until a transition takes place in terms of a new leader, you couldn't really see it as mirroring the same kind of change that has happened in Ethiopia to some extent, for instance.
Now, the US and EU have asked President Kagame to step down after his final term in 2017, but Kagame is unlikely to bow down to their demands. Could there be any hefty pressure to repel President Kagame's plans at this stage?
He recently said that the more people tell me not to do it, the more likely I am to do it. And I think, of course, President Kagame himself doesn't want to be seen to be bowing down to pressure. Of course, I do think he will extend his term, and I think most people will say that. But I think the more real effects will be if the donors decide to continue supporting President Kagame in his new term. And I think that's a question that donors will have to ponder. But they should probably do it when considering what Rwanda's political constraints are domestically.
Now, the process to change Rwanda's constitution has been so swift and unchallenged inside the country, contrary to other countries where third-term debates have led to bloodsheds. Why is it so particular to Rwanda's?
Well, some would say that Rwanda has managed to do this because they followed a proper legal procedure in terms of organizing a petition of nearly 3.8 million voters. I think that would be one line. Another line would say that, well, the Kagame government is extremely popular in Rwanda and it should be allowed to continue.
Pritesh Bahuria from the London School of Economics.
Africa on the Move.
And Africa on the Move this week takes us to South Africa, where we visit the International Comedy Festival. Comedians took to the stage to share their views of the world and their brand of African humour. Among them was South African-born Trevor Noah, who recently succeeded Jon Stewart as host of The Daily Show in the United States. Tuzo Kamalo reports.
In the world, black people are the only people that laugh at disappointment. You could fire a black guy on the spot, the nigga will laugh in your face. You'll be like, what the fuck? I'll be like, I'm fired.
This is the sound that engulfed South Africa for 10 days as comedians from all over the world came together just to make people laugh. For 10 days, the International Comedy Festival helped to put a spotlight on Africa's long unnoticed capacity to crack jokes. The achievements by South African comedian Trevor Noah, whose talent landed him the job as host of the world's renowned Daily Show in America, are a sign that the world has developed an appetite for African jokes. In this sketch, Noah brings in his German-speaking Swiss father.
As a comedian, I don't rank that high in the world of German anythings. Like one day we're having lunch, my dad looks at me and he goes, so Trevi, what do you do now, eh? You got a job, do you work? I said, yeah, dad, I'm a comedian. He's like, ah, yeah, yeah, so the clown, eh? Yeah. No, whatever. German's holding me back, you know? I dream of impressing him with his language. I'll get to his house one day, he'll welcome me at the gate, like, ah, clown boy! I'll be like, guten Tag, Vater. It's epic, it's got that feeling.
Ugandan comedian Salvador testifies that Africa is a land of opportunities and jokes are one of them.
This is the greatest nation in Africa. No, because the way Nigerians hustle make you believe that there is a God. Everyone can hustle. You can't just give it anyhow. So when I was coming, the first time I was like, I'm going to the land of opportunity. I'm not a land of jollof rice. I'm not a land of fufu. I'm not a land of juju.
Although a few African comedians have made it big in the international arena, South African national Maxwell Njali says there is still a long way to go.
Here I think comedy is something that is still looked down upon. It's associated with these street dramas and something like that.
But this comedy seems to say clowning is what makes comedy tick.
In our marketing campaign, we distributed flyers. This was for the benefit of white people. Because white people like to read things. We distribute flyers to black people and they'll call you, "Hey Carl, what time is your show?"
Teboho Moreng, a 22-year-old South African national, says one positive aspect of the growing comedy industry in Africa is that it has brought back laughter to the troubled continent.
Yeah, comedy is interesting. I like smart jokes, creative jokes, conceptual jokes that will make you crack till your stomach hurts.
Another comedy fan, Nixon Mube, says achievements by African comedians like Trevor Noah have provided inspiration.
In the townships, you'd find comedy shows happening at clubs and taverns. So it's going there slowly but surely.
And that report was compiled by Tuzo Kamalo in Johannesburg. Kenyans from all walks of life have flocked to social media to voice their concern over the number of lavish trips their president is taking abroad. President Uhuru Kenyatta is said to have made more foreign trips in 3 years than his predecessor did in 10. Many Kenyans feel such conduct is incompatible with his pledge to fight corruption and rein in government expenditure. Kenyatta, however, says his frequent trips are in keeping with Kenya's standing as a regional power. Mark Kogwa is a Kenyan social media activist who's been following the debate closely, and he told Eunice Wanjiru what he discovered.
If you've been online, and been online specifically with your trending topics on the social network Twitter set to Kenya, then you likely have noticed a trend that took place towards the end of last week, beginning of this week. And it actually made its way from a series of questions, and you did have a kind of a core group begin to ask around the value of the president's trips. Now, some people would be more specific and say that this actually arose from the size of the delegation that went to COP21 in Paris, and that's where it really started. The discussion was, we see people in Paris, we see them at COP21, how many environmentalists are there? And one of the tweets that got quite a bit of engagement online was around that there was, I believe, a group of 41 in the entourage, and I think 3 environmentalists, or less than 3. And so people just questioning and beginning to question, well, how long has he been away? Where else has he been? What value have we gotten? And from that spawned the discussion, is Uhuru in Kenya, or hashtag Uhuru in Kenya?
Okay, so we have the presidential spokesman, that's Manoah Esipisu,
right,
who defended this foreign trips. And
sure. He
said that in a statement, that the country is getting diplomatic and economic benefits. Can we say that these benefits are tangible?
I think that's a great question. I think that when Mr. Esipisu puts it that way, of course, he's presenting what is, in many cases, just a written statement to members of the press. However, if you look at really where the series of conversations, tweets, updates, comments, and interactions are taking place in cyberspace, sometimes it takes more than a soundbite to satisfy them. And so what you likely have seen is a trending topic over the course of 7th of December, and that was around Uhuru in Kenya and trying to, of course, present a counter-narrative.
Okay. We have President Magufuli of neighboring Tanzania.
Yes.
Who is, you know, cutting costs and trimming costs, for example, also doing in foreign trips. So how much could Kenya as a country save in case these foreign trips are cut?
Kenya has been at the forefront of a trending topic on Twitter with the hashtag, "What would Magufuli do?" And in many cases, it's a very humorous look at the series of measures that the new Tanzanian president, Dr. John Pombe Magufuli, has taken in his new reign as president. And what he's done can be interpreted as, you know, being very, very financially conscious. And these, for the most part, were humorous, but in some ways it did speak for longing of Kenyans to see that kind of bold and very decisive cuts and changes in spending.
Kenyan social media activist Mark Kaikwa.
Making a difference.
Sorting facts from fiction isn't always easy, but for journalists who want to maintain their credibility, it's a bare necessity. Africa Check is a non-profit organisation set up in South Africa in 2012. It aims to promote accuracy in public debate and the media in Africa. This report for Making a Difference by Katya Eisenhardt-Rorter is presented now by Fred Mavuni.
Every newsroom sometimes struggles to sort facts from fiction, but checking the facts is a must for accurate reporting, be it online, in print, on radio or TV, if you want to be taken seriously by users, readers, listeners or viewers. South African news anchor Ima Rapeti from the TV station ENCA knows the difficulties inherent to her job well. For example, false statements from politicians can easily be taken as truth if left unchecked. So Iman uses Africa Check as her secret weapon on the net.
An agency like this helps to trace things backwards. And even if they reach a point of no conclusion, it allows us to say, huh, we need to think about where we get our information from and how we use it.
Anim van Wyk works for the non-profit organization Africa Check in Johannesburg. She and her team check the credibility of statements made in public through research. By double-checking the facts, they have built a solid reputation as a non-biased institution.
We try our best to be seen as a credible and independent and non-partisan organisation by making best use of the best sources and also being transparent in the way we write up our reports, and then over time to check all sides of the debate and all political parties so that people don't think we're anti the government or anti opposition parties or anti anybody. We're just interested in the facts.
Africa Check has offices in Johannesburg, London, and the Senegalese capital, Dakar. The organization produces reports in English and French. In addition to South Africa and Senegal, they also work in Nigeria, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. Africa Check is funded by several independent institutions and foundations that support factual and independent journalism, which doesn't mean that Anim van Wyk's job is easy.
We often battle with government officials to get the information we need, even though it's paid for by public money and they have it available. We often wait months and months for our queries to be answered. And then the other big problem is that often statistics in Africa are outdated or there's not enough research on certain topics.
Africa Check is always on top of the latest headlines and it is free of charge for public use.
That report was written by Katya Eisenhardt-Rorter. A reminder of our main stories before we leave you. Organisers of global climate talks in Paris are sounding hopeful that they could reach a deal by the end of the week, even though there was little indication of how differences over funding could be resolved. Rwanda's President Paul Kagame has yet to decide whether or not to run for a third term. And we've also been hearing how Kenyans are complaining about their president's lavish trips abroad. We welcome your comments on this program, either via text message to country code 49 160 957 595 10, an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. As always, thank you for listening. From me, Mark Caldwell. Bye now.